Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Dynamite preview. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hanfler and Michael Sidgwick, to look ahead to tonight's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also NXT, Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Hanfler and Sidgwick to look ahead to Dynamite tonight. And Michael Sidgwick, all the fallout from Double or Nothing.
Yes. I don't really know what to make of this Dynamite because the storytelling patterns have been thrown askew of late. I think because of the scheduling ahead of Double or Nothing, certain beats felt like they were too soon ahead of that pay-per-view. Like, I don't know what to expect from this Dynamite show. All I know is that I can see directions in the women's division, which is good because now that Britt Baker's the challenger, now is the time to build faces, and I feel like there's one tonight. I have no idea where Pinnacle Inner Circle goes because I'm just not familiar with the beats of a storyline that's been plotted like this, so Christ knows, but I'm anticipating some solid booking to build a challenger in the women's division, and I've got your clickbait sentence, Wilborn. I'm expecting a big return in a match. Well, I'm going to wait till the mid-rollout to reveal who I think the big return is going to be, but we'll get to that as we get to it.
I'll say this for AEW. Normally, when you start a podcast mentioning fallout, it's because we've got nothing to actually talk about. Based on the Dynamite rating last week, they'd be forgiven for not tanking these Friday shows, but holding stuff back. You know, they've maybe noticed that there's only so well you can do in a difficult slot with an audience that is more than prepared, perhaps, I don't know, to catch up after the fact rather than tuning live on a Wednesday. I'm not sure. With that being a go-home show, they'll probably have a little bit more momentum than they had last week because you're coming off the back of a pay-per-view rather than leading into one. But this card reads like one that we talk about on a Wednesday afternoon. So I think they deserve a little bit of respect for trying to stick to whatever their plans were, despite obvious, like, difficult scheduling changes. If, like, this could potentially happen next week as well, isn't it? Like, it's really not ideal, but in terms of trying to, like, plot the storylines and go fairly sort of, I don't know, fastidiously week by week, we know what happens when they get taken off course, and I kind of admire that they're attempting not to do that in spite of the fact that they're, like, staring down the barrel of half their audience not catching it.
Yeah, should AEW be worried about the ratings, Sid? 526,000 last week, 0.2 in the 18 to 49 demo. Obviously, vast drops, but also partially excused by the fact that, I mean, we've seen the same with shows across the board, basically, because of the NBA. And obviously, due to the not only the day change, but the time change. But are you concerned? Should I say this because certain areas of the internet made a big thing of this rating when it came out. But I'd love to know your response to certain areas. Well, certain areas of Twitter, I'll just limit it to that, made a big thing about this. What do you make of it all, mate?
It was an evidently bad number that you can place an absolutely gigantic asterisk to. In fact, you can place several asterisks next to it. It was a Friday in an unprecedented age in which things are starting to open up, and Friday is actually a social night. The weekend wasn't great for it. The competition forced it to a ridiculous slot for the first time they've occupied it. And looking at today's Wrestling Observer, the DVR viewership after the fact went up to about 900,000, which is consistent with some of the better programs. That indicates to me that the core audience still wanted to watch this episode, just not at the time it was thrust upon them through circumstances. As ever, I like to take a step back these days and try not to do too many impulse reactions. That sounded like a subtweet at you, Hampton, because that's the name of your pay-per-view article. It absolutely wasn't. It was just the first thing that came to my head. But you know what I mean? Like, patterns are important. Start about one-off things. It's about patterns. It's just an aberration of a rating that was pretty much covered in terms of the usual numbers on DVR viewership, which indicates to me that it wasn't for a lack of interest, it was just for a lack of convenience that the live number in that woeful slot, which, you know, doesn't really, it scans as ominous ahead of Rampage, but that's the number that they first got. I expect Rampage to be headlined and built by like this massive match for the first one. So that's another story, another discussion point for another day. But in short, no, not at all.
Well, thankfully, the rating will go up this week because they've got some proper WWE talent on this show. Mark Henry's going to address the AEW audience.
I'm joking. Calm down.
Delete the tweet. Chill out. Mark Henry addressing the AEW audience, obviously unveiled at Double or Nothing. Hamfler, what do you think he's going to say? And what do you think of this announcement? We sort of covered it on our Double or Nothing review, but it's worth going over again.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't say a great deal. I've got nothing but praise, really, for how they've handled having Paul White so far. They've stayed true to their intent, weird as it is to have a 7-foot commentator, but that's what he was there to do, and I'm guessing, like, provide advice and guidance backstage. Mark Henry is a sellable asset for this and this alone. By that I mean, absolutely, if there is a shred of buzz about Mark Henry signing for AEW, that came off the back of Double or Nothing. I don't think it was a lot. I think there was more buzz for AEW's product than that guy that used to work for WWE signed for us. Promote it this week. Maybe try and boost a rating. Use it as one of the things to boost a rating. I think there's plenty of other things that are more interesting than Mark Henry speaking. But yeah, like, if anything, like, they're selling it just enough. To not mention it again would perhaps be underselling it and therefore undermining why you bring a guy like Mark Henry in the first place. But as much as this, like, would typically scream angle alert, I kind of hope it's not. I don't, especially not this early. I don't think I want Mark Henry folded into angles. And I just hope that they've not tried to fool us. They've not used the Big Show as the guy that has got nothing to do with anything to make you think the same's going to happen with Mark Henry. And then he's going to Salmon Jacket us and he's going to be involved in like
a Salmon Jacket.
Is that what this is? Is there like, does it turn out that like the Big Show is a kind of red herring for Mark Henry and there's actually a program spewing forth? I kind of hope not. I think as the years have passed, people have been maybe a bit too kind to Mark Henry's quote-unquote good run in WWE. Like, had a good year and one amazing promo. Like, I've got no ill will against Mark Henry, but let's not gandaft with like what he actually accomplished in WWE. And yeah, I don't want the Big Show thing to be a red herring and him to get sucked into an angle. I'd quite like this to just be, oh, we've just plugged that we've got Mark Henry. He says a quick hello. Maybe a heel slags him off and banters him off, and that's it. I don't need more than what we got on Sunday, to be honest.
I've got no idea what it's going to say, and that is usually because I don't really care. Like, if, you know, ex-active roster member was going to get interviewed by Tony Schiavone, I would talk about what angles he might be involved in or they might be involved in, and then, you know, fantasy book on the back of that. He's not going to work, or at least he's not going to like be involved in an angle. I just think he's going to plug Rampage. There will inevitably be some kind of a cheap joke aimed at WWE's expense. It's just part of AEW's bread and butter. Like, oh, well, I'm going to the back again, shagging. That's what I used to do in the other place. Something like that, you know. I'll take whatever is given to me and I'll react accordingly to whatever that development is. For now, just watch Rampage and do a cute WWE joke.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be a good hand here in AEW, Mark. Thank you for everything. Exactly. One match we can look forward to tonight, Sid, and I sense you're very looking forward to, is the Young Bucks versus Pac and Penta El Zero Miedo. Yeah, great to see the Knobheads back on telly. That's all I'm going to call them now, because they are the wrestling Knobheads, and I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be absolutely terrific. It's got no chance of not being absolutely terrific, tremendous, every superlative you wish to throw at it. And what I like about it, it's that I think on one level, it's an excuse. The Young Bucks are telling the story, and it's visualized wonderfully by this just hubristic knobhead, as you say, attitude. They're dying their beards, they're spending loads of money. Like, how ridiculous are they going to look in 1 or 2 months' time? I love that. But what all of this is meant to convey visually is that the Young Bucks, and they've said this in canon, are untouchable. I think this is, on one level, a freebie dream match of, oh, well, we're still great. We stole the show Double or Nothing. And look at this match we just had on Dynamite. We are literally untouchable. And they're going to near that peak where they look more ridiculous and have more matches like this. Then we'll eventually get a firm direction as to who's going to completely lance this idea and take the titles off them. That, we're nowhere near that yet. But this is just a quiet building block in where the very best. And if that reads as dry and functional, who cares? It's Nick Jackson and Pac and Penta and Matt Jackson in a match. Like, this should be incredible. It's going to, I'm assuming they're keeping the same fan set up. So it'll be a continuation of this new strain of incredible that we're getting from pro wrestling, touch wood, or so it would seem. There's a million spots you can fantasy book in this match. The greatest thing about the heel Young Bucks is that not only can they construct these wonderful matches that just build and build and build and twist, is that they can do the dickhead thing. They can do Zero Miedo right in front of Penta's face before they do the BTE trigger. Like, it's going to be full of those little character moments as well. And I think that the Young Bucks will win. Mm-hmm. I think that the Good Brothers will descend on the scene, join for a beatdown, and maybe this could be the site of Phoenix's return.
Ooh.
He was injured, hence why he didn't appear at Double or Nothing in any capacity, not even as a body in the Battle Royale. But I don't know the status of his injury, but so I'm just throwing it out there. But what happens with Phoenix is that he works such a style that he tends to get banged up easily and then comes back. And maybe I'm bargaining, so I would just like to see Rey Fénix, but I expect that to be the case. He could come back, save Death Triangle, and Frankie Kazarian could come out as well, setting up some kind of, in 2 weeks' time, because Kenny Omega's got Jungle Boy in a week. I don't know, I think they could do some kind of insane multi-man by threading all of these various players in this web together. Kazarian and Death Triangle versus Omega, the Bucks, and Nakazawa. There's loads of different permutations, but I've kind of got a feeling that Phoenix is going to come back.
Just a word on what you were saying there about how the Young Bucks are going to get even more preposterous. I just had the thought, and I'm not suggesting that people should go and do this, but it's also very much within their wheelhouse, where whatever the tag team they're going to be facing, we tackle it actually on a podcast that's just so happens to be coming up this weekend on what needs to happen after Double or Nothing. That's going to be out on Sunday with me and Sidge talking about the future direction of a lot of titles and what have you. But at some point, I'd love someone to cut a promo on the Bucks, and Tony Schiavone stood with them for some reason and says, oh, not much reaction from you guys. And they go, oh yeah, sorry, we've had Botox all over our face and we've got no way to
Before we get to Hanford very quickly, Kazarian and Death Triangle versus the Bucks and the Good Brothers. 8-man tag next week before Kenny Omega versus Jungle Boy.
My word. Yeah, yes, that'd be please. Sensational. I mean, I'm sure those four lads in the ring are going to do some great stuff, Hanford, but in reality, this is all going to be about Brandon Cutler versus Alex Abrahantes on the outside, isn't it?
Well, yeah, let's hope that Alex Abrahantes still features. I was thinking about Kaz doing the old telly pose that he used to do in TNA, and for one night, it could be Death Square as well, because as the Elite Hunter, he could join them for the night. Really like that, because I think it gives, like, it's an important next step for Kaz in this angle. And as well, I don't want Pac and Penta to just slide again. I'm becoming unhappy with the booking of Penta specifically in AEW. Just actively unhappy with every step they take with him. And I think at least, and I do think the Young Bucks will win here. I don't think like AEW traditionally not the company, even though it's non-title, to have Pac and Penta win this, to like jumpstart them getting a title shot or get them up in the rankings or whatever. It just doesn't feel like the way they book. And fine too, the champion shouldn't be getting beaten. But I don't really like them in this spot unless it's for that, unless it's for something with a bit more meat on it. I don't want, like, the Young Bucks can fight somebody every week in order for them to be able to like rub our noses in the fact that they've beaten our favourites, or just in general be obnoxious pricks. But like, there's a reason why this division is so stacked, is because there's teams to do that with every week. So I feel a little bit uncomfortable with Pac and Penta being one of those teams. I'd rather not think of them like that. So I much prefer, as Cedric sort of suggested, this to lead to more stuff for the Young Bucks to make more enemies. And I'm ready now for this division at large to show itself a little bit. Completely understood why the Young Bucks' first major program as heels was with, well, effectively like two singles upper mid-card main event guys rather than a proper tag team. But, and I don't know if this is because I'm thinking about how much I want to see Proud and Powerful step out of the shadow of this feud they're in at the moment. But I'm definitely ready for loads more tag teams to make this start feeling a bit more like a division chasing the belts again. I want to see Young Bucks under pressure from multiple different teams at once. I want to see more tag matches for ranking spots.
They've been doing an awful lot of that.
It feels a little bit like there's a lack of a sense of targeting the titles from those tag teams. I'm sure a lot of that goes unspoken, but I feel like some of the tag matches are a touch aimless, and I want the sensation that this great and stacked division they've got has more teams that are actually trying to win the belts and trying to take on the Young Bucks. I think it's a product of the Young Bucks being so involved in Kenny's stuff, like being so involved in like a headline program effectively, which was the Moxley Kingston stuff. You know, it was, you could call it like a co-main event or a semi-main event of Double or Nothing. It was such a big deal. I almost want them to drop down a little bit into like feuding with some more of these tag teams. So I welcome that in this regard, but I don't want to see Pac and Penta like phase down after the fact.
They'd be forgiven, like you said, with the fallout of Double or Nothing, to just, you know, announcing some championship celebrations and some, you know, so-and-so in action things, and just some bog-standard wrestling matches. Instead, we're getting a sodding bull rope match. Dustin Rhodes versus Nick Comoroto. Sweet Jesus, Michael Hambler, what's going to happen here?
Well, I would like to think that Comoroto will just get this, like, violent flurry of offense on a Dustin Rhodes that is only too willing to sell him. I have no doubt, like sell for him. I have no doubt that they've worked through the kinks of this match 100 times over in the factory. Comoroto has not been intentionally so, not been kind of exposed in a big way yet. We've seen a bit of what he can do, but it's mainly about looking at him. It's mainly about seeing him as a threat in this group, about like just how massive he is, about what an awesome throwback look he's got.
Wooden chair, didn't he?
He did, and he no-sold that. He was the perfect jobber for John Moxley that time, because he was the only guy brave enough to sign the open contract. Like, they've preserved the aura, this really like old school 80s vibe around Nick Comoroto that I think Dustin Rhodes is subsequently like a perfect opponent for. The ball rope stuff's a little bit cute. Like, Dustin Rhodes had it in his hand when he entered the battle. Like, that's how they've arrived at that. So that's like a little bit cute. But again, it like kind of like speaks to the old school leanings that they're probably going with Comoroto. So I've got faith this will be entertaining. It'll probably be better than Cody and Anthony Ogogo, truthfully. The heel babyface dynamic is crystal clear, and the heel's going to do nasty, awful things and probably win. So I would imagine it'll probably be like better received than that match on Sunday.
I'm looking forward to this because, as I tweeted at Double or Nothing, Nick Comoroto was big in the ring. He gets bigger every time I look at him. He's the perfect guy for that promotion because he acts as such a contrast to so much of the rest of the roster that he just appears more like a monster. They're clever with the gimmicks. I will say that, Hamlet, you're wrong. They have very suspiciously had the bull rope in Dustin's hand more than once. There's still not a real reason for it, but you know, they've done it like twice. So okay, just to correct you there. But they're not daft. They realize that, right, we've got this unit, love that word, this massive unit of a bloke, right? How can we maximize his appeal? How can we build his strengths? Right, okay, well, he's massive and he's a strong lad. Pair him with Dustin Rhodes. Dustin Rhodes is just an incredible veteran performer who can extract the best from anybody he works with. He's also quite large, so it looks like somewhat even in a way that it looks impressive for Komuroto to beat him. So you've got a guy who can guide Komuroto through it. A stipulation that you can totally buy is not just this weapon that suddenly materialized. It's the bull rope. It's got huge connotations with 80s wrestling and Dusty and JCP. So that works on that side of things. And then also, Komuroto was so strong that he could feasibly grab the rope and just yeet Dustin Rhodes into his forearm. Like, there's loads of stuff they can do with that rope that gets Komuroto over like an absolute beast. So I just think this is, for a TV match, you know, we're spoiled with this company. You've got a great dynamic, a weapon that should, if they book the match as I want it to be booked, let's be honest, make the most out of Komuroto, this complete monster. And they've got the guy who, if Komuroto is green and he looks it, they should obscure that through his opponent. Very nicely booked all of this. But Komuroto isn't someone that's so like hot and new and up and coming and over that I would take any result, to be honest here. Like, it wouldn't be a great, it'd be weird if he lost, but it wouldn't be like, oh, he's dead and buried. So give me whatever they want. Just do the rope spot into the forearm, please.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
On the other side of things with the Nightmare Family versus the Factory, we've got a tag match. Cody Rhodes and Lee Johnson versus QT Marshall and Anthony Ogogo, who will be out for revenge after Double or Nothing, Sige.
Yeah, I really don't know what to make of this at all. Like, I'm not being funny, right? If AEW is bad consecutively for 6 months, I will then begin to completely bury it and think badly of it. So for that reason, I'm not really cynical about what happens to a Ogogo going forward, but there's a part of my brain that's just been rotted by WWE's booking. It just has. I see this match and I'm thinking, oh, is this just a thin way, a thin excuse for a Ogogo to get his heat back and for that to be of no dramatic consequence to the thing I've just seen? Because I've seen so much of it in WWE, and because WWE looms so large over the wrestling world that you can't help but think it's just, it's oppressive in terms of how it's conditioned you to watch this thing that you're meant to enjoy. So for that reason alone, I'm a little bit worried that any gravity of having defeated a Ogogo will just be neutralized here. Like, if you at least made a bad booking decision, and I'm not convinced it is personally, but it feels like enough people are to the point where I'll say, you know what, I might be wrong on this. It just feels like either they're going to damage a Ogogo yet further or wash away the gravity of the result. So I don't really know what to make of this, other than if you look at the makeup of the match itself, it's probably a better idea to put Ogogo in tags at this point. I wouldn't say he got exposed in a long singles match, but it certainly wasn't. I certainly didn't get the vibe watching that match of, oh Christ, he is a killer combat athlete with a legit background coming to stove Cody's head in, to use the wonderful promo words of the man himself. I don't really get that from the match, and maybe this tag match is a way to be able to extract that.
Yeah, I didn't want to race to that identical conclusion. That like, I don't want to be the one with the bad faith comparisons of Cody to Triple H. So I don't want to be thinking of your Rob Van Dam's, Kane's and Booker T's getting the pins on Raw that nobody remembers, or Brock getting his win at Extreme Rules, things like that. Like that kind of smacks of that. And I don't really want to make that draw that comparison. So I tried to think about where they might go with this instead. Is there a possibility, if Anthony Ogogo can go and get a bit more seasoning and they can take their time, like he can look at the Cody Rhodes match in kayfabe, I mean, as a learning experience where he just fell short on the big stage when he was full of confidence and full of beans beforehand. Like, his tweets now, for the want of a better phrase, pack less of a punch than they did 7 days ago because he's lost. You know, like, receiving all of this in kayfabe, he's lost. So, like, being able to run his mouth doesn't feel quite as cool anymore because he fell a little bit short that first time. Could Cody Rhodes and Lee Johnson win with a victory over QT Marshall and Anthony Ogogo, and then Ogogo stick one in QT Marshall's ribs and leave the factory and leave behind QT Marshall and go it alone? And we see that, like, I'm not saying he has to befriend Cody, and I'm not saying he has to stay with whatever, I don't know, what they have, like, is it like the old Big Brother with the bars? Do they have two sides of the factory each now? So he doesn't have to cross the side and work with Cody, but he just has to think, you know what, like, I don't think this is me. Like, I know my punching power and I know my skill set, and this crap Tony Soprano knockoff isn't helping me. And that was proven on Sunday when I lost to Cody. It won't happen again, but I'm going to do it by myself and I'm going to go about it my own way. And it gives you kind of a reason to, like, I don't know, like, take him off television a little bit, like, go back to the basics with, like, vignettes and stuff like that. We've had this awesome explosive start where they've done a really good job of establishing a finisher. But losing when it counts does matter, even if you're losing to the experienced pro wrestler. So maybe like a back to basics build with him, and he starts racking up the dark and dark elevation wins with that knockout blow.
I think the best way to have AEW fans, in the words of QT Marshall, forget about it when it comes to lots of Anthony Ogogo is, and this is probably just the sadist thing coming out again, is have him really hospitalize Lee Johnson. I think he goes in. I think he's got the excuse of, like, look, my ribs are injured. You know, you target the eye, you target the ribs. It's like, you didn't put out a fair fight there, Cody. And I don't know. I feel like there's a storyline there. Maybe because I'm just like, we've got to do something with Cody and you can't really put him in a title picture. And he's going to go away for a bit, you would presume, from TV when Brandy's due, which I assume is in the next few months, from what I've seen on social media. I think sending him into, like, not to, you know, copy what's going on with Hangman Page, or has been going on with Hangman Page, I should say, but send him into a spiral of, like, yeah, you're all well and good looking after you, Cody. It's everyone around you who gets buggered up because of you. Something like that. So Cody's busy, you know, hitting the crossroads and pinning QT Marshall. They can still get the victory. But Anthony Ogogo just punch, and then that elevate, you know, whatever you want to call it, when he throws them up in the air and then just breaks their ribs, basically. I don't know whether you do something like that. That's the beauty of this, I suppose, Sid, just before we move on, that it's quite unpredictable, this. It's not just someone getting their heat back necessarily.
I mean, yeah, I'd really like to hope that isn't the case. I should have been conditioned by AEW, not WWE, by now to think that AEW is not going to do WWE things. Who the hell knows? I still think that a bunkhouse has got potential, given that they've already used some of the associated plunder. In which case, like, if tomorrow Ogogo and QT Marshall win, I still will trust the process and think, all right, okay, well, it's 1-1. Battle lines have been, like, drawn, and they could do the bunkhouse and which faction emerges best. Like, this company knows how to book. I'm just... Sunday felt like a misstep, so you're going to have to doubt the process as a result.
When do they return to Wednesday nights? Is it it's one of those things, isn't it, where it's like probably this date, but then also with the NBA, you're not really sure. Is that right?
I think so. I think it's to be determined by outside factors. Mm. My big concern is the fact that they're probably going to have to tape Omega versus Jungle Boy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they're going to do consecutive tapings with whichever fans they have in attendance. Spoilers, will be out there. I don't want to see them. Or do they go back to just a closed set with the idea that they don't want people to spoil that result, but you need the people there? I'd rather have, I don't know. It's just, but I just want to back on goddamn Wednesdays. I want to back on the goddamn road.
So does, what, so like, does our podcast schedule.
Like, I know that there was like a minuscule audience difference, but what an advert this is for the TBS move as well. Because if this was going to be like an annual thing, and we had last summer with the like episodes moving to Saturdays and things like that, it's coming back to like Raw getting preempted for the dog show, isn't it? Like, it's like, it's an absolute nightmare for like weeks and weeks on end. So yeah, it adds more like strength to the TBS move. It's theirs, their slot, and it can't be shifted for anything.
You mentioned the number one contender there, Sid Jungle Boy. He is tagging with Christian Cage tonight to take on Private Party. I love the relationship that Jungle Boy and Christian Cage established. There's the highlight of the Casino Battle Royal, which we will fix on Sunday, myself and Michael Sidgwick on our Get the Table podcast, all about Double or Nothing Fallout. But anyway, they are tagging against Private Party and, well, presumably getting the victory, Sidge.
Yeah, can you remember, Wilborn, we did a podcast all about what Christian's going to do in AEW shortly after Revolution. And we pitched, like, it'd be great if he worked some of the greener tag teams, like Private Party and Top Flight.
Yeah.
Right? And we were racking our heads to say, right, Tony Khan is much better at this than we are. And he will just create a tag team partner for Christian Cage that works perfectly. And we can't see it because we're not Tony Khan. We were going through the list of like roster members who could conceivably be his tag team partner, because it's good that an expert tag team wrestler like Christian can have a younger guy by his side, teach him and coach these greener tag teams who need to come along, and Christian can facilitate that brilliantly. And what happens? Get Christian Cage and Jungle Boy together. And what a tag team that is. A tremendous tag team that is. This match, I expect to be Private Party's best effort in quite some time. They teased Christian and Matt Hardy doing something during the Battle Royale. If they do it in front of fans back on the road with this acting as a beat towards that, then yes, I'll be happy, purely because if there's any kind of nostalgia match that isn't going to be like anything more than a gentleman's three, it needs a full crowd to be able to roll that one over the line. So if they can save that, if in fact it does build to that ahead of that, then yes. I just think that this will be very good. And the only storyline direction stemming from it I can see is to further bring Christian Cage and Matt Hardy closer together, to give Christian Cage something to do before the Kenny Omega deal. And obviously he's got unfinished business with Team Taz. Loads of directions here, but I'm really excited to see Private Party again in a match that should get the best out of them.
Mm. Yeah, I love the prospect of this Christian Cage and Jungle Boy team being a thing they can go back to like fairly regularly, as they like very slowly tiptoe towards what I imagine will be like a Christian Cage heel turn down the road. They're sort of a perfect pairing in that regard, because Jungle Boy, it's easy to say now, with the second you look at as him as the number one contender and with Christian Cage as a partner, that Jurassic Express was maybe the mid-card act holding him back. And it's not something he has to abandon, but all of a sudden, just visually and how you perceive him feels differently almost overnight. And I think how they can use that is that obviously Christian Cage can then feel like he's taking him under his wing, but within the body of the matches, Jungle Boy can outwork him, which is Christian's whole deal. He outworks everybody. But he's found a guy that is his mate who can outwork him. So you don't need to rush to a heel turn or anything, but you can just plant those seeds. You can see that Jungle Boy is younger, is like kind of like can fly, is just like generally fitter, like less worried about injuries because he's not got this like long rehabilitation that he's just gotten over. All of these things that allow him, basically give him an advantage of how he's going to outwork Christian. And the first time Christian's come face to face with somebody, maybe he can't outwork. And I really like the idea of them dropping that in for what I assume will be an eventual turn for Christian, probably on Jungle Boy, dating all the way back to the Casino Battle Royale, which only like, again, like adds weight to that match and adds weight to people's memories of that, and carries a pretty middling match at Double or Nothing, makes it like better in people's memories. So I really like this booking. The fact it's Private Party is great, because as Subject says there, Christian Cage, Matt Hardy, it's kind of like a natural direction to go in. Even if it's just for like a throwaway Dynamite match, like it's something quite nice to promote once for a short 8 or 9 minutes. really love what was happening with Cage and Team Taz. So again, I think that, like, I don't think that's going to be something that's going to get dropped. But yeah, like, Christian Cage and Jungle Boy teaming together at this point in Jungle Boy's ascension, I think is absolutely fascinating for the stuff that will come months from now.
And I think, as part of this match, we may see a surprise appearance from the 26-year-old piece of gold. I want to be a cowboy, baby. Of course, eliminated by Matt Hardy from there. I don't really know what his position is within AEW. Handshake agreement is all I've read.
He's under New Japan contract, but obviously the Forbidden Door allows him to work AEW.
So, yeah, I just feel like maybe Hardy comes down, tries to get involved for his boys, and then Leo Rush does some mad sodding dive. But like you say, I think Hardy and Cage, especially considering what we saw when we had Hardy and Rush working together, it just fits better. And Leo Rush can go off and do some mad stuff because he's just insanely talented. And I'm so happy to see him back on my television screen. Speaking of things we're all insanely happy about, Britt Baker is your new AEW Women's World Champion. She's having a celebration tonight, Hamflet. What could possibly go wrong?
I'm really looking forward to this. One of the things I mentioned on the Double or Nothing review was that the fans were almost too pleased for Britt Baker that it, like, just, I don't want to say damaged, because I don't think the match was that awesome anyway, but there was just no way that they were going to go along with this awesome heel that she's, this awesome heel character that she's crafted over a year, basically. It's this character that's brought her to this level. And people were just so happy to see it that she was received as this massive babyface. The Tony Schiavone hug was awesome, but was also very warm. So that was only going to, like, enhance the cheers. I think tonight, everybody knows their role, as it were. Like, Britt Baker's going to be at her awesome, villainous best. I think the fans are going to get that joy that they want to share with her out of the system and get back to hating her. And looking at the rankings, Thunder Rosa is right there as a potential first challenger, and Ty Conti is one match behind and a one win behind. And Britt Baker's whole deal was that she was just plugging away, winning and winning and winning until it was, until Hikaru Shida had absolutely no choice. And it was like, not it's my turn, but it was her turn through assembling those wins. So I feel like the interruption doesn't have to feel like your Common or Garden NXT interruption. It can be, well, you did it through the rankings. Well, now, if it's Ty Conti, well, now I'm going to do it for the rankings. I got a match next week and I'll see you in two. Or Thunder Rosa saying, I'm at the top of the list. And who bloodied you up in one of the most important matches in AEW history? I think you have two immediate angles for Britt Baker. Like, I'm so excited for this women's division, by the way. Like, Britt Baker as a champion with this raft of cool new challengers that are all having good to great matches on Dynamite. Like, it's like new era stuff. Honestly, like, felt like a prop, like, not to sort of like diminish Shida herself, but in terms of like the reset, the start, yeah, really felt like it's happening on Sunday. And like, we can actually fantasy book. This isn't the generic match in the third quarter hour, which they somehow went back to after Rosa and Britt Baker. This is different. This is a segment that's going to matter, setting up other stuff that's going to matter.
Yeah, as we've said before, as I've said before on this podcast, like, people were wondering, why haven't they strapped Britt Baker yet? Britt Baker's clearly the star of this division. Like, they clearly have more investment in her than Hikaru Shida even. And it turns out you had to build a division first. Like, it's he knows what he's doing. And when you see the division he's built and now who's at the centerpiece of it, it's all converged to come together. And he's bought himself, like, loads and loads and loads of, like, investment in this women's division from the fandom by the fact that he's done this. I want a killer promo from Baker. I fully expect it. It's interesting on not so much of who's the first challenger. I think we'll get to that imminently when we discuss the token women's match on this card, just to completely undermine everything I've just said. It'll be interesting in terms of which direction they take with Baker. Do they just accept the inevitable and turn a babyface? Do they realize, hang on, we've just built loads of baby faces, that so that would require a shredding of the plans. They've got Red Velvet, Ty Conti, Thunder Rosa, Chris Statland has picked up the odd win and came back. She kind of has to stay heel for this division to be a good division, because they've been very elegant and careful in building all of these baby faces for it to run through. So how do they, the question is, do they keep her a face? A heel, I think yes, because of everything I've just said. How do they then possibly maintain her as a heel in the eyes of the audience. Cut to her. They've had the nice moment with Tony Schiavone. Right now, she can be an arsehole to him again. And I think they should do that. Tony Schiavone is like the perfect man. He's the perfect guy to divert the heat away from, or like divert the support that's just raining down on Baker away from her. If she can be a complete dickhead to Tony Schiavone, he's so instrumental in getting things over. He's so beloved that that is the key to me. And I think they need to have that because, as I said, like there's so many baby faces they are quietly building.
Yeah, he turns to her and says, "What a sensational moment last weekend. How did it feel?" And she turns to him and goes, "Why are you the way that you are? You took my moment away from me. You stole my spotlight." He's like, "I'm just happy for you. I wanted to give you... Get away from me. Get your dirty paws away from me." Red Velvet versus the Bunny, Sid. You alluded to it there. How do you see this developing the rest of the women's division?
I see a win for Red Velvet and do some stuff on Dark and Dark Elevation to vault up those rankings. Or they could just like, I don't mind it when they do this. Or the champion's going to face the number four contender. Good. It's not a pay-per-view. And they've been visually built as a winner. So I don't care. She doesn't have to necessarily go to number one every time. But I think Red Velvet wins here and puts her in line for a women's title eliminator against Dr. Britt Baker. And what a perfect match. We said the other week, Red Velvet is now in the old Jungle Boy position because Jungle Boy's now not there anymore. He's totally evolved. She can be in the old Jungle Boy position. Endearing, effervescent babyface, loads of fire, loads of guile, who can lose because they embrace imperfections on this program. Not everyone's this championship caliber athlete emerging from NXT to change everything, and then everyone's just 50-50 as hell. Where's Damian Priest, by the way? They embrace weak points or perceived weak points of their characters because they realize it all goes to build a story. Red Velvet is too inexperienced to defeat Britt Baker, who's now got the experience and the confidence and the championship qualities to defeat her. That's where I would go with all of this.
Yeah, I can't really add to that. I think she's like a perfect television opponent, which again, as Cedric pointed out, doesn't rely on her being at the top of the rankings to get that. I think it's like, it's sort of a big match for Red Velvet in the sense that she'll be expected to like really stand out in it. Not necessarily carry the load as such, but certainly against someone like the Bunny, the win is a guarantee. So it becomes less about the result and more about how she looks in it. Which I guess was the same with the matches against Jade Cargill. Same thing, you know. So I've got a lot of faith in her. I really, really love to watch Red Velvet, and I like to watch, similar to Jungle Boy, I've really enjoyed the development so far, and there is enough trust and faith in the process that when the time is right, or when they perceive the time to be right on pulling the trigger, they'll get it right and they'll get her elevation correct. And I think she'd make a great 1 week challenger for a Britt Baker, but not even just Baker for the title, just other heel. Like, I'd like to see her work Nyla Rose at some point. Like, give us a bit of a break, and then she can have one more go at Jade Cargill, stuff like that. I want to see her in all those babyface spots. So I don't really need to see a rush to the title now. It's like, ordinarily, this would look like the token Dynamite women's quarter hour match, but because you've got Britt Baker celebration and a raft of challenges for Britt Baker, this is division stuff. This is stuff that SmackDown and Raw aren't offering you ever. So, like, I'm in favour of it.
Finally, you're talking about Double or Nothing for that. We're not going to spend, you know, time talking about every single person. You know, no offences to Miro, Hangman Page, Sting, Darby Allin. We are going to talk more about that on Sunday's podcast with what needs to happen with Double or Nothing. But in terms of, like, the big things that happened at Double or Nothing, Hamflet, what's next for the likes of Kenny Omega, the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle? It's difficult to see where you go next for all of them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. And like, not to sound brutal, after everything we've talked about, I'm not arsed. It's a good card, this Dynamite. And Kenny Omega's got Jungle Boy next week. So that's his, as far as I'm concerned, that's his distraction. He's pulled immediately away from Pac and Orange Cassidy, partly in character, because he's probably not going to want to think about how close he came to losing the title, especially to Orange Cassidy. That won't get forgotten. But Jungle Boy is the direction, so fine. And I've ran out of patience with the inner circle and the pinnacle to such a degree that I don't have it in me to like waste mental energy on fantasy booking in a hope that they get it right again. That like, I know plenty of people enjoy Stadium Stampede, so I don't want to speak for everybody there, but like for my entertainment, get this right and make the pinnacle feel meaningful and make Chris Jericho feel a little less vain. The net positive of all of this is Sammy Guevara in both matches. As I said in the review for Double or Nothing, I think at Blood and Guts they showed you, Stadium Stampede they told you a little bit for me, but nonetheless he is absolutely broken out of this thing as like one of the next big single stars. So net positive in that regard, but it might have come at the expense of the pinnacle. So I don't have any ideas, because what if we, as we always do, try and pitch something creative and cool, and then you get like a bubbly bath, you know? I'm hoping for the best now rather than being able to think of ideas for it.
Yeah, I suppose Sidge tonight is just going to be probably an unbearable promo from Kenny Omega. No selling what happened on Sunday and looking ahead to beating this long-haired dweeb from the bush or something, it's going to say. Yeah. And then, yeah, in a circle and pinnacle's intriguing, because we've ummed and ahed and we talk more about it again on Sunday's podcast regarding how you follow up, you know, Stadium Stampede 2 and Blood and Guts with them.
Just listen to the podcast that drops on Sunday.
Look at that. There you go. That's a hell of a tease. Yeah, we go into a lot of detail.
That's a tease for me. Even I've got to listen to that one, because I'd like to know what Cedric and you think. Oh, Christ. I have to make time for that on the weekend, as well as this bloody Dynamite. Friggin' hell.
We talk about...
We'll have to make time for Dynamite, mother.
Next title challenges. We talk about fixing the Casino Battle Royal. And I get very carried away after what happened with Sting at Double or Nothing. But you have to go and check out the podcast, which is released on Sunday lunchtime here in the UK, to find out more thoughts on that. But let us know your thoughts ahead of AEW Dynamite tonight on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, of course. But for now, my thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.